CFWHD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Wendy Gillette. The death toll has risen to 36 from a line of severe storms crossing the U.S. Joy Azdu and her kids took shelter when a tornado hit their home outside St. Louis.
I thought that we were going to die. My kids were crying. I was just trying to cover their heads. We couldn't see anything. We didn't know what was happening.
The storms also brought damage to Gordo, Alabama, where WIAT-TV's Avery Boyce filed this report.
Gordo resident Christopher Stevenson says they sought shelter in a basement.
I dropped my wife and my little girl off, and I was like, I've got to go give a helping hand.
Simmons says his home was not hit, but after seeing the devastation, he began praying, and he joined the cleanup effort.
Trump envoy Steve Witkoff says he had a productive meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin, setting up a possible call with the president.
I expect that there'll be a call with both presidents this week, and we're also continuing to engage and have a conversation with the Ukrainians.
He was interviewed on CNN. Some Democratic lawmakers are incensed after Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer helped push through GOP legislation that averted a partial government shutdown at midnight Friday. Texas Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett appeared on CNN.
I think Senate Democrats have to sit down and take a look and decide whether or not Chuck Schumer is the one to lead in this moment.
A federal judge ordered a halt to deportations of gang members from El Salvador, but the White House says almost 300 were arrested and flown out of the U.S. That follows President Trump invoking the Alien Enemies Act. Loyola Law School professor Lori Levinson.
The Alien Enemies Act has only been used three times in American history, and that was back at times when we were actually at war, in World War I and in World War II and under the War of 1812. But we've never seen it used as President Trump wants to use it.
The death toll has risen to 59 and 155 hurt after a nightclub fire in North Macedonia. The BBC's Guy Delaney on the possible cause.
The band were using some onstage pyrotechnics, and sparks from those pyrotechnics set a fire off in the ceiling. From video footage, you can see the flames creeping across the ceiling and people, presumably staff, using fire extinguishers in an attempt to put them out.
U.S. airstrikes on Houthi rebels killed more than 30 people. National Security Advisor Mike Waltz on ABC.
This was an overwhelming response that actually targeted multiple Houthi leaders and took them out.
The strikes followed Houthi threats that the group would again attack ships in the Red Sea. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tome Olson. A new report commissioned by faith leaders outlines the high moral stakes at play as the Trump administration pushes to cut federal programs to pay for extending tax cuts passed in 2017. Here's Eric Galatis.
Co-author Karen Dolan with the Institute for Policy Studies says the budget resolution recently passed by the U.S. House would eviscerate Medicaid, the single largest source of health coverage in the U.S., by cutting $880 billion.
The proposal could result in a loss of coverage for 36 million people.
Republicans have long argued that tax cuts boost the economy and allow people to keep more of the money they earn. Extending tax cuts would amount to less than a dollar per day in savings for the bottom half of U.S. families, but the richest 0.1% of Americans would receive over $314,000. Corporations promised to use windfalls from tax cuts in 2017 to raise wages, but Dolan notes the bottom 90% of workers have seen no benefits at all.
When corporations get huge windfalls in the form of tax breaks and tax loopholes, that money does not trickle down to workers' wages or to the economy. All it does is enrich that corporation. operation.
The GOP also plans to cut food assistance by $230 billion and increase work requirements. Dolan says the majority of people who receive assistance are already working.
92% of people who receive Medicaid work either full-time or half-time, or have disabilities, are over age 65, are taking care of children or elderly adults, or are attending school.
This is Eric Galatis. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly sunny and a little breezy today, a high near 40. Partly cloudy tonight, lows upper 20s. Much warmer Monday, upper 50s with sun. Mild again Tuesday, but the wind picks back up. Rain and snow Tuesday night and Wednesday.
Currently it's 26.
Maggie Dawn.
Happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody. We've got a whole show dedicated to the holiday. We're going to be talking about Irish heritage. We've got live Irish music. We'll explain what the heck curling is. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons from 2 till 4.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire, the Valley's home of Nightlight with Peach Wobble.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Cripescast. I'm your host, Charlie Behrens. This is the podcast where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest. We are powered by Everlight Solar, and here is this week's episode. Hey, everybody. My guest this week is Eric Hawk. He is the guitarist of Portugal the Man. Eric and I have been buddies for a couple of years, ever since Joey's song last, maybe 2 years ago is when we first met. But he lives out there in Portland. I had a show in Portland, and so we decided to link up, do it in person. It was a lot of fun. By the way, sorry we have gone a couple weeks without a new episode. It's just been a little crazy with filming the special and then jumping right back to the road. So we're going to try to not do that as much as possible. But yeah, it was super fun talking with Eric. We discussed everything from like where he is on his sort of music journey right now, the things that he's up to, his history with Portugal, the band. With Portugal the Man. And then just kind of, you know, he's from Alaska. So Alaska versus Midwest, we dove into that a little bit. And also the Pacific Northwest versus the Midwest. A lot of quirks, a lot of fun things. We had a great conversation. We also talked some Bucks. He's a big NBA fan. So a lot of great stuff. But anyway, that interview coming up here soon. In the meantime, want to let you guys know I am in St. Louis on 321 and then Cedar Rapids the next day, Omaha after that on 328. We're going down to North Carolina playing Charlotte, then Tysons, Virginia for everyone in the D.C. area. And then 410, we're in Knoxville, followed by Jacksonville, Florida, two shows in Jacksonville. So hope to see you guys on the road. And that's about all she wrote there. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, here is my conversation with Eric Hawk of Portugal the Man.
Is that going to be comfortable to do that?
Yeah. Like right? The Brian Gumbel kind of vibe.
There we go. Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's kind of like...
need like a branded kind of windscreen cover situation.
You yeah. know? Like we're on a golf course somewhere. Yeah, I always feel Brian Gumbel. He's a golf guy, right?
News guy,
golf,
sports,
something.
NBA 90s guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of in the same range as he could go.
Chris Berman. Yeah.
The way he does.
Not quite a Dick Vitale, but you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who could?
You can't hold a candle to that stuff.
Is this how they usually start? You just start talking about like 90s figures.
Yeah, and then, it's kind of how we like to ease into this stuff.
Yeah. Are you an NBA guy? Are you a basketball guy?
I like
guy?
The box.
Yeah.
But, and I like the Bulls from the 90s because, you know, that's when I first started watching basketball.
You're like a real Horace Grant era kind of situation. But,
oh, wow. Yeah.
You can do a whole hour about Damian Lillard. We're in Portland.
I know.
Bought my wife's Toyota from Damian Lillard Toyota. He's still, it's a crazy thing. You'll see a lot of local sports accounts that have now co-opted Bucks into it. Like there's a lot of Bucks Blazers love just because like Dame is that, you know, X that we're still super cool with.
Oh, is that the case? I was actually curious how you guys feel about
that. No, we still love Dame. He's everywhere. He's still on, you know, billboards around here. His number will be retired. Like he was, you know, he brought the Blazers back at a time where we lost Brandon Roy. We lost Greg Oden. You know, we just lost Aldridge. We had a rough couple of years and Dame put us back on the map.
So that's kind of like Milwaukee when we had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and then he went to the Lakers. Yeah. It's like, you know, you guys.
Still him.
Yeah.
We're not going to paint over the murals anytime soon.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So do you then root for the Bucks at all?
I do. Yeah. I'm a big Brooke Lopez guy.
Oh, nice. Nice.
I mean, Freak is great. It's a fun team.
It is a fun team.
It's a fun team. And you guys look scary this year. You look good.
You know, we'll have to see. It's always the kind of thing. It's always crazy how long the basketball season goes. Yeah. You know, you don't often think it's going to like July.
From Halloween to the 4th of July. It's crazy.
Yeah.
82 games. They're busy.
That's a stretch. By the way, I love the lariat. Yeah. So it's called bolo tie.
It's called a bolo tie. I'm bringing the bolo back. The bolo never left Alaska. I'm guessing there's a pretty strong contingent of bolo wearers in the Midwest.
No, we don't have the. A bolo tie thing. I think it starts maybe in South Dakota.
Yeah.
North Dakota, South Dakota, Western North Dakota, South Dakota. I believe that's the beginning of the bolo range.
Stronger hat. Strong brim. You know what this says? It says I don't work around heavy machinery ever. I've never touched a lathe in my life.
what is there a purpose to those?
Do you know?
I had one as a kid. Like kind of for fun.
Yeah.
I don't know why we got a costume box or something. It
was given to me by an indigenous fellow in Colorado named Walt Poulier. And I think it was just a gift and a like kind of show of generosity and respect. But it's also a hard ass look. So
yeah, it is a hard ass look. That's cool.
Yeah.
Maybe one day I'll pull that off.
It's my grown up ensemble.
It looks good.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. I'll mail you one.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. That'd be cool.
go to a Buc-ee's. They got all kinds of stuff on them.
Dude, Buc-ee's. How many Buc-ee's, being on the road, you've been on the road for like, God, the 25 what, 20,
years.
25 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So, my first U.S. tour was in 2000. So I'm at my 25th year.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I'm old.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, you're not. How old are you?
I think I'm 43.
You're 43.
Yeah.
If you have to think about it, maybe that's
past 40.
Being a traveling musician, being a professional song and dance man, you know, what's like, when does it start being awesome? I'm living the dream. And when does it start to like wear on you?
It's all. So we kind of have a little bit of space this year. And there was some time during COVID, but we did a lot of side quests. We started up a foundation and stayed busy. I think this is the first time in a long time that we've had time. And God, we hit, you know, with Feel It Still, with Woodstock, with all that stuff. It's my guesstimation that both 2017 and 2018, we played more than 365 shows a year because we were doing morning radio things. We were doing like the three song acoustic thing. We did all the late night shows.
Yeah.
We were doing like at some points like 3-4 performances a day, and we were on the road for 18 months straight. I had the same bag packed for 18 months. and it was at a time that was full of, you know, just experientials and superlatives. We were just doing crazy shit all the time. And like, you know, went from the morning drive time alternative stuff to like Radio Disney and Ryan Seacrest. And you get that question, like, what's it like? Like, you know, how's it feel? And all I could say is, I don't know yet because I don't have time to think. And I have no idea because this is all a blur. But the blur is great. The blur is super fun. And obviously, we're all kind of wired for it. You know, I probably have the soul of a long haul truck driver. I do something that changes my environment on the daily. If I wasn't doing this, I'd find a way to travel and incorporate that into work.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it so I guess it's sort of the travel that wears on you, not the music of it all.
I love the music. And I think anybody that does this on a mediumish to highish level has like a case of the look at me's. Like I obviously, you know, we all do to an extent.
A case of the look at me's,
you know,
like I need attention.
Yeah, you don't know. You don't know nothing about that.
I don't know what you're talking yeah, about.
I've never heard
that. I don't even want anyone else on the stage with me. That's
I mean, that's a pretty sweet gig. Is it just you two in the car? Is that
We actually were.
I bet you and the camera.
Dante, my buddy Bill, who's opening on this run, and my buddy Adam, who's opening on this run. You met Adam.
Yeah.
Adam Grohl, Horseshoes and Hand Grenades.
Yeah. That's it.
That's us. Yeah. Right.
God,
now.
That's beautiful. There's just so many. I can identify all band and crew by smell. You know, because we're like two buses, two trucks, like 15, 16 people out there. It's so many personalities.
I mean, just to coordinate that many schedules is insane.
Yeah. Well, you abandon all hope, ye who enter, you know, because everybody's schedule just becomes the commutative. That's not a word.
Oh, I know what you mean.
Yeah. It becomes very egalitary. It becomes just the community schedule. You're doing what everyone else is doing, and you just become this little like 32 legged organism that slithers around and eats the same chips.
Can you like be you know, you hear a lot of bands talk about being creative on the road and how the road doesn't always like necessarily breed a lot of creativity since you're kind of go, go, go. But is that true for you guys?
There's a lot of cool scenery and a lot of cool people. And I think technology got so good and so small. We all have AirPods and instruments, and like I have a million voice memos of me being like, okay, that's a song, you know.
Oh, okay.
But they're terrible. You listen back to them afterwards. I will get a couple good ideas every now and then. But it's funny, you get on our bus and it's not usually a guitar floating around, but you know, there's a lot of overnight time. You're always driving the bus at night. So yeah, there's times to like kind of if you hit something while going like 80 miles an hour down the interstate, you grab a guitar, you pluck it out. I've got a lot of kind of poor recordings of ideas that I then take and like re-record into good things at home.
Okay, yeah,
that's usually how it works.
That makes sense. It's kind of how it is as a comedian too. You kind of go around, you jot down stuff either in a notebook or in your notes section. You know,
you get it when you can.
And then yeah, when you're like, because for me it's kind of like, okay, I need a new bit. I need to fill this hour. I don't have a bit. Let me go to the notes section, like see what random note I put down that I now feel like working on, you know.
And you just play off yourself. Like you have to make yourself laugh for a bit to land, right?
Yeah, I definitely have to make myself laugh. Oftentimes that doesn't make anyone else laugh.
Yeah. Know? Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, you got to kind of say, like, is this relatable? Will people get the premise right off the top? But with music, let me back up a little bit. So much of the stuff we scroll past now, because it's all changing.
Yeah.
It's like it's looking for relatability right away. Something in the first 3 seconds to grab you. You know, to get you doing that again. Does that translate really in music? Because music's a different thing than comedy or sketch.
But it's kind of not. Like you're at any point, like I know you do a lot of sketch and there's, you know, a vast library of classics and the greats to go off. And it's kind of the same thing with music. Like if you're a student of the genre, you know what kind of song you're going towards. And even if it's what's in your head, like a completely original idea, you can still kind of like get references along the way as you're doing it. Like, this is kind of like a Floyd thing, or like, oh, this would be cool. Some Beach Boys harmonies, or like, you know, a Wall of Sound Spectre kind of drum situation. Like as you're stacking ideas up, I think the reference game is huge. And I imagine it's got to be similar in comedy. Or are you a singular genius voice in the
No, God, no. But what you're talking about is you're talking about like musical structure, like putting something that this band popularized and kind of using that as a reference point to build it. And sort of, I think in comedy, you're like, okay, this is a configurational joke where you say enough for the audience to then put the punchline in their head, or it's a it's a reference, or it's a is like kind of a thing.
I'm doing a crazy thing right now. I'm working on a film score, and it's got it's got 35 cues in it, like little snippets of music. And the filmmaker put temp tracks in there, you know, so a lot of copyright safe, either like AI vocal removed songs or, you know, just like stock clips of music.
Yeah.
And I get to go in and try and beat all those, but like with my own interpretation of what's on the screen and how it feels, but it's got to be close.
Yeah.
So like very kind of genre specific thing. And it's the most fun I've ever had.
That's cool.
In the studio. Cause it's just me. I have to be the arbiter of quality and taste. Like, is this objectively better than what was there? And a lot of the time I got to be like, nah, I got to do better.
Yeah.
And I'll just scrap a whole, you know, a whole song, a whole 3-minute clip, and I'll do it again. Yeah. It's super fun though. It lends itself to a lot of late night recording. Like last night I was up until 3:34, just banging away down there.
Is that kind of when your creativity naturally goes?
I hate that about myself, dude. But absolutely. I was just wired to keep the campfire going overnight, you know?
I kind of struggle with the same thing with writing. Like, it's like you get on a hot idea at like 11 o'clock and you're like, oh, buckle up.
It's going to be a whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah. You're trying to get your 8 hours of sleep and worry about your circadian rhythm, but it all goes away as soon as that idea comes.
It's always kind of been the case though. Like I moved to Seattle and, in 99 from Alaska. And the first job I really got, like the first serious job I got, was a overnight like graveyard manager at a hotel.
Oh, and you were one of those guys.
Yeah, it's just like chain smoking out front and like a cornflower blue shirt with a yellow tie and khakis.
What kind of a hotel was it?
It was a Best Western.
Oh, dude. Yeah. So you got some stories.
It was a Best Western in kind of the dicey part of town.
Yeah.
And it was sick. We had, you know, like fixed groups that would come through. That was kind of like our bread and butter. And one of them was, it's called the Meps, but it's like teenagers that have joined the army and they get like one night in town before they ship off.
Oh my God.
And like, that's... I'm not a voice of authority. I was 18 at the time. Yeah, right. And I was like, hey, you can't, whatever.
What's the weirdest thing that you encountered being an overnight hotel manager at the Best Western?
1 million prostitutes.
Really?
A million prostitutes.
Prostitutes frequent the Best Western. Huh?
This was right off Aurora Avenue. In Seattle, and if you know anything about Seattle, like that's where you go.
Okay,
if you're in the market.
Didn't know. Yeah. Did you know when you took the job, or figure that one out?
I was a teenager from Wasilla, Alaska. I didn't know anything about anything.
But you learn quick.
Yeah, you get world weary very, very fast.
Oh man, so you grow up in Alaska. Were you always into music there, or how'd you get into music?
Yeah, actually, I knew John, the singer of my band, since the 80s. We went to the same elementary school together. But I played in a band with Zach, who's the original bass player of the band. We were in bands in high school together. I had like my little punk trio. Again, this is a town of 1,000 people in the middle of nowhere. So it's like we're all in each other's bands and there's nowhere to really play. So you're like playing, you know, rec halls and armories and, you know, the Elks Club.
Yeah, right.
Wherever you can get.
Right.
Yeah.
The Elks Club. Yeah. What's that like?
In Wasilla, it's pretty hot. It just becomes, you know, the de facto community center of, you know, it's the hang.
But you got like, you know, you kind of hear about like the 10,000 hours and the Beatles getting that playing at the strip club in
Hamburg.
Yeah, right.
I don't think Wasilla is quite to Hamburg level, but yeah, we would play just everywhere.
Yeah.
And you know, set up a generator, go play in a field.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
It's a lot of outdoor partying happening in Wasilla, Alaska in the summertime.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like Alaska and Wisconsin have a lot of similarities. Like there's also a lot of field parties. Like we grew up
a lot of moist earth.
Moist earth. Yes. A lot of humidity.
Yeah.
You know, someone would have a barn. And so that every like 3 months they would have a show in this barn.
Yeah.
That was like pretty much ready to come down on everybody. But, you know, there was no code to be, but you would just get a bunch of kids coming from all over to that barn to play music and everything.
Yeah, we would, I mean, like someone's head gasket would blow on their old piece of truck. And we're like, cool, let's have a party where we roll this out to the hay fields and shoot the out of this thing. And we'll set it on fire and everyone goes home at 5 a.m. It's the sun's still up.
Is that so you kind of like get the bug for it there, and then obviously you're like, I gotta find a place to like take this. So you go to Seattle, and at that point, like, were you sort of like inspired by the Seattle music scene, or was
I had like a VHS copy of a film called Hype, which was all about the Sub Pop scene and just all the grunge bands and the grunge bands that didn't quite make it but still totally revered up there. Like for every Soundgarden and Nirvana, there was a Tad, Green River, the Fastbacks, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's this killer scene and I missed it. You know, I showed up years after grunge was dead, but the clubs were all still there. And like the infrastructure for it being a music town was there, even if there wasn't like this this gold rush of like A&R men from LA trying to sign the next Nirvana. But there's really nice clubs and really nice rooms and you get to know the community really quick. So I start a band there called The Lashes, kind of a power pop thing. And we were spoiled for choice of, you know, great 400 cap rooms, 500 cap rooms. We could get booked on a Friday night with just like a demo cassette and, you know, persistence calling the same number on a landline over and over again. So it was kind of a perfect time. Like the dying gasp of grunge allowed my band to step in and become a headliner pretty quick. And, that band ended up signing with a punk label in the Bay called Lookout Records. Lookout signed, you know, Operation Ivy, Green Day back in the day.
Yeah.
The Donnas, like really, really cool label. So total dream come true for you know, a kid from a small town. It was just nuts. But yeah, we were just grinding it out early for, you know, the love of the game and absolutely no money and doing the van life thing. And that band rolled along for a number of years. We were playing, you know, like 100 shows a year at the top, and we're still on a group thread. We still talk.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone did real interesting things out of that band. The singer ended up becoming my buddy Ben. He ended up managing Grumpy Cat.
Really?
Yeah. He became a meme manager. It was like a childhood friend of his dad's was the original guy that created Keyboard Cat.
Oh, no kidding.
So Ben sees that, you know, Keyboard Cat's blowing up, reaches out to the guy. He's like, are you seeing any money from this? He's like, no, but it's really making people happy.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, well, they're putting it on shirts on Hot Topic and, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, I could do a whole 6-part podcast about that guy.
It's kind of wild.
It's super crazy, but we were all ambitious, you know, and that just kind of goes to show you, even if we were like a bowling league or something, we still would have tried to make it the best damn bowling league we could have.
Right.
You know,
right.
Everyone was just like young and hungry. But yeah, we eventually signed to a major, toured our ass off, had like a minor hit on the radio, did a couple of, you know, a couple of TV things. But I think eventually, you know, it just the phone stops ringing. The label kind of loses interest. We got like our release date kept getting pushed further and further and further. And eventually the record that we recorded in 2003 doesn't come out till 2006. And by that point, like everyone's kind of fried from the road. So I just kind of put a cap in it. And yeah, around that time, I never lost touch with John and Zach from Portugal. I was, you know, kind of watching them start up because they were in a screamo band for years called Anatomy of a Ghost.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It was
like
real, you know, of the era kind of stuff. They were great. They're super entertaining, super fun, but they played their asses off. And then that kind of, you know, came and went. And then this Portugal the Man thing comes out of nowhere. And I, again, you know, being a kid from Wasilla, watching another kid from Wasilla kill it, I'm like, there can only be one. Like, yeah. This is crazy. Like, how
there must only be one.
What are the odds that there's another like national touring act from Wasilla. So it's always like gassing each other up, you know, and staying supportive and staying in touch. And then I was talking with those guys and their manager at the time about joining up with the band. And again, at the time, that's like 150 show, 200 show a year band. I'm like, I could, I guess, you know, goodbye girlfriend, goodbye apartment, put my cat for adoption and that's sell a my
song
car.
Right there. Goodbye, girlfriend.
You sure you're not a songwriter?
Up for adoption.
That's pretty good. It just seemed like a crazy commitment, but I was on board with it. And then I got hurt. And this was back in May of 2007, right as that band was really kind of taking off. Yeah. So, you know, it took a long time just to kind of figure out and learn how to be a human in the world again, let alone like getting in a van, knocking out a bunch of shows. It wasn't there. So it just kind of tabled the conversation, you know?
The Tap.
CBS News Brief. The death toll is now 36 following storms the past couple days in parts of the central and southern U.S.
Oh, Lord Jesus, man.
That was one expression of the storm's devastation from a resident of Tarrytown, Mississippi. Over 30 people were killed in U.S. airstrikes targeting Houthi rebels in Yemen. The group has threatened to attack more ships in the Red Sea. National Security Advisor Mike Waltz on ABC.
What we inherited was a terrible situation. And this is one of what will be a sustained effort to right that wrong and to reopen global commerce.
An overcrowded nightclub caught fire in North Macedonia, killing at least 59 during a concert. Video shows fireworks may have started the blaze. The BBC's Guy Delaney.
Multiple facilities have been treating the injured. Well over 100 people have been hospitalized, with some of them suffering severe burns.
CBS News Brief, I'm Wendy Gillette.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
The Bucks beat the Pacers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. NBA, Bucks with a win last night over the Pacers, 126-119. Milwaukee able to hold on to fourth place in the Eastern Conference, one game ahead of Indianapolis. Tonight, the Bucks host the Thunder in prime time, tip off at 8 o'clock. Men's college basketball, the Badgers with an upset win, 77-74 over Michigan State. The Spartans, the number one seed, knocked out of the Big Ten tournament. Head coach Tom Izzo.
Well, I'm disappointed, and little things can make a difference. We preach that all the time, but sometimes, you know, it doesn't go through.
The Badgers now play this afternoon in the finals against the Michigan Wolverines. Greg Gard on getting past the Spartans.
One heck of a college basketball game. Two really good teams, two really high-level programs that have been, you know, in this position a lot. Obviously, I have great respect for Tom and his program. And, you know, in order to compete at this level this time of the year, you got to play your rear end off. And I thought both teams did.
That's Wisconsin head coach Greg Gard with sports on Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly sunny and a little breezy today, a high near 40. Partly cloudy tonight, lows upper 20s. Much warmer Monday, upper 50s with sun. Mild again Tuesday, but the wind picks back up. Rain and snow Tuesday night and Wednesday. It's 28 degrees right now.
At Civic Media, we encourage active political engagement and remind listeners to think critically about political advertisements you may hear during this critical election year. Our stations are licensed by the FCC and are required to accept all ads for federal candidates. We also air state and local candidates, as well as paid ads from issue and PAC groups. Truth is rarely as simple as any political ad may claim. So again, we urge you to think critically about what you hear in the spirit of promoting authentic and respectful civic dialogue.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. More Trump administration mass layoffs at CISA have experts raising concerns over U.S. readiness for cyber attacks on election infrastructure and federal agency networks. An additional 100 in-house and contracted cyber specialists were reportedly terminated in March. The terminations raised the number of layoffs at the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency to an estimated 300, though new CISA leadership has denied recent layoffs. As we reported in February, a team assisting state election officials in improving and hardening election systems was laid off. VoteBeat reported March 11th that CIS's new leadership informed state election officials that it had suspended operations and funding for the Election Infrastructure Information Sharing and Analysis Center. In addition, a McCarthy-like effort is underway to purge CIS staffers who ran 2020 efforts to combat foreign and domestic disinformation in social media, some concocted by the Trump campaign and its allies. Reports in cybersecurity journals say that the latest layoffs involve so-called red teams, which pressure test the security of government networks. CBS News quoted one cybersecurity expert let go in February as saying about U.S. networks, "We're being targeted daily, hourly, and every single minute." We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, if you're just tuning in, I'm Charlie Behrens, and this is my conversation with Eric Hawk from Portugal the Man.
How was that? Because it was sort of like a wild accident, right?
Yeah. Well, it should have been wilder. What it was is I fell in a hole at a friend's barbecue. In their yard, or off their yard, I guess. But for a kid that grew up doing so many stupid things, just a rural upbringing, jumping headfirst into rivers and off mountains and stuff, like fell in a hole. There was a ledge up against a hedge, and I was sitting on that ledge, and the ledge goes back, and I went to catch myself on the ledge behind me, and just the neighbors behind them had carved out the land and dug out a foundation slab for an addition on their house.
Oh, geez.
Down I go. So yeah. Wish it was a cooler story, but definitely a change. But you know, the event itself, I think about it, you know, but I just kind of came out of it knowing that I had my hands, had my brain. I didn't f up anything else on me too bad. A few broken ribs. But I knew I could still do what I was doing, like pretty much immediately. It was just a matter of like, what do I need to bring with me, or what do I need to learn to do that?
Yeah. I mean, then just thinking in that way, knowing how chaotic the road is and everything.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to like get back on the road after that?
I had to ease back into it. I had to, you know, my first couple of tours I did, I would just like join my friends' bands as like a pickup artist and you know, as like a side guy. All of that was I figured out how to drive really quick, how to just like throw myself in and out of a car, and so I figured, well, I don't think I can like get in and out of a van very easily, or I'd take up too much space to do that. But if I'm in my own car, I can bring all the shit that I need. My chair's in there, I've got like terra firma, I got a, you know, if the green room's inaccessible, at least I got a seat to sit in.
Right.
So that was it. Like my first five or six tours, I just like basically lived out of my car. And at one point it made me really mobile, you know, and I was just excited to have independence back. So I joined a band from Detroit for a while. It was kind of like spending a lot of time out there. Started playing with a singer-songwriter named Shelby Earle. And for the most part, it was just like her and I in a minivan driving around doing weekend warrior tours, you know, like 2 weeks, 3 weeks here and there. But, you know, just a little bit more every time, with a little bit less in my bags every time, just figuring out what you need and what you don't need.
Yeah.
That was the big thing. It's like at first I was traveling with like a whole hospital bed, you know, like just a whole situation, because right. I thought that's what you need. And it's taken me a long time to figure out what I don't need. But
that is an interesting thing of figuring out what you're doing and don't need when you're in a position where like everything you bring can kind of be a pain in the ass.
I think that works that way for everybody. It's like, you know, I'm spending 4 days in Hawaii, so I need 26 shirts and 12 pairs of pants. And you know, like the tendency to overpack is just like a human thing, I guess. I don't know. At this point, like I can make it a month, 6 weeks on the road with like a duffel bag and a backpack.
Yeah, you know, you kind of do get that thing where you realize when you're on the road, you don't miss any of I mean, maybe for the first day or two, you miss the stuff you left behind. Then you get back home after, especially like 2 weeks on the road, and you're like, I got all this stuff too.
What is all this? It's kind of broken my brain. I've got like 7 half packed bags in my closet right now. All of them have a toothbrush in them. Yeah. All of them have like 2/3 of a stick of deodorant. And, you know, one of those little travel packs of Q-tips. They're all the same. I don't know. I'll probably have them forever.
Weren't you doing like a lot of recording at that time too? Or did you start doing that and more?
Yeah, I was trying to like figure out ways to kind of like get off the road. So I got invested with a venue up in Seattle called The Crocodile, and should have had you there.
I know. In Seattle. So that's still your venue. Yeah. You're still part owner of that.
Yeah. We're like a 700 cap room with a 300 down below. We got a hotel upstairs. Could have put you up.
Dude, what's up with that? The Moore also had a hotel.
Yeah, I like the Moore Hotel.
Yeah, that place is so haunted.
It's a spooky room. I love it. Cool. We do. I missed it this year, but a couple of years ago, it's an annual thing. They do, you know, the band, The Last Waltz.
Oh yeah,
the band.
Yeah.
So they would do like a, you know, Superstars of Seattle kind of cavalcade and recreate The Last Waltz every year. And
cool,
super fun. Yeah, I got to do Cripple Creek last
Did you?
Time. Yeah.
Oh, which, that's awesome.
And put it together. I'm like, you didn't put it together. it's a slow burn, but
I just put it together.
Yeah.
That's so good.
Yeah. And someone was like, oh, you're going to hell. I'm like, I'm going to hell. It was that way when I got here. What are you talking about? I had nothing to do with the writing.
When you said Cripple Creek, the first thing I thought is I used to play that in high school, you know, completely missing what you were putting down there.
Subtle. Did you play?
I think we talked
about this at Joey's song.
Yeah, I play a lot of things half-assed, like guitar and Same. Mandolin and harmonica, cool. That kind of stuff. So,
do you rip on harmonica?
I play. Yeah, I can do a little bit, you know.
Can I? I was trying to do some blues harp stuff on a little score piece yesterday. Can I send you a track and email it over?
That would be great. I mean,
let's collabo. There we go.
Where'd you get this thing? Oh man, yeah. I mean, I can do like a little bit. I gotta mess with it, but that's a dead read. There's a couple dead reads here.
Yeah, that's it. But... Charlie,
there's something
Barron's.
There. There's something there, you know.
Man of talent.
Yeah, I don't know. Half-assed talent, but
it's a sexy skill. I feel like
you want to blow on the thing.
I'm good. I never play in the key of D.
Okay, I never play in the key of whatever disease you have. Never play in the key of your disease.
There it is. There was a time that I feel like every lead singer also ripped at harmonica. It was a prerequisite.
It was a post Bob Dylan kind of thing.
Yeah. You know? But even like Ozzy. Is it The Witch or what's the tune?
I don't know. I just remember seeing him in Behind the Music. Mm-hmm. I think it was Behind the Music playing the harmonica.
Yeah.
This was after he snorted the line of ants, I believe.
Oh, sure. That from the dirt. Was
with
Crew at that point.
He was with Motley Crew. Yeah. You saw that Behind the Music too.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I read the book.
Did you?
Back in the touring days, we had a well-worn copy of The Dirt in our first van. This is before streaming.
Oh.
when you had to read words.
Yeah, geez.
But The Dirt was great. They knew what they were doing. There was like a whole 20-page section of like glossy photos in the middle of it. So it's a picture book.
You get those glossy photos in them, that'll get people opening the book, reading the little caption, and then before you know it, you're actually reading the book.
It makes a great platform to snort a line of ants off of. Too. It's non-porous.
A little gloss. You can't lose any of them, you know. Mm-hmm. You see them moving there.
All accounted for.
Yeah. But owning the venue and everything like that. So
you I'm so ADHD.
No, me too. I do this all the time. But I mean, is that like you find these different business ventures to sort of like, did, were you doing that because you were kind of off the road or you were just looking to diversify your stuff?
Yeah, you know? I was looking to find a way to like stay close to it without being on the road, and being in a venue, you just have people that are on the road all the time coming to you. So you get to microdose that reality without actually having to like do the sacrifice.
Yeah, right, you know, right.
On Terra Firma, it didn't really take. I'm still involved in it, but I just couldn't get off the road. And I joined up full time with Portugal about 10 years ago after a lot of talks and a lot of planning and a lot of attempts to kind of like slide into it. But once I was in, it was just like at no point were they like, okay, you're hired. Or like, here's your contract. It was just get on the bus.
Yeah.
and that was it. And at no other point was there a conversation of like, are you in or are you out? It was just, it was in it. And I think the road's like that, you know, like other bands that I was in, if there is any kind of personnel change, it was the same kind of thing. You just like jump on the merry-go-round,
mm-hmm.
you know, the only way to get off of it is to just jump off. So people come, people go. But yeah, it's a crazy, crazy industry, man.
It is, because like when you're touring and, you know, like when people, you know, sometimes I think bands tour for the love of touring. Sometimes it's almost like, oh, we got this gig. The money's there. You know, we take it. Like, do you find that most bands and people, you know, do you find like they're just, because you look at like Willie Nelson, right?
Yeah.
That dude, you're like, he can't be doing it for the money. But then you hear about Jerry Garcia. He just built so big of a team that he was touring for the money at some point, yeah. you know? Yeah. Do you think bands, generally speaking, do all those dates like because they're striking while the iron's hot, or are they just like addicted to the road? Because you'll also hear how hard the road is.
I think there's usually someone behind the scenes that's coercing them into doing it. You know, like with Feel It Still, we didn't say no to anything for years, but we also didn't feel like we had the option to say no to right. anything. It was just like, hey, you're doing these 12 things this week, and they're on the calendar, and you're like, okay.
Yeah.
But at no point was I like, oh man, I'm going to make so much money off this. It was just like, boy, I'm going to really see every city in Ohio.
Right. Right.
And then we're going to see them all again 3 months from now doing the Cleveland, Cincinnati, Columbus, you know, shuffle.
Doing the southern tour of Ohio. And yeah. There's a lot of cities in
Ohio. There's a lot of Ohio.
You ever played Van Wert?
I don't think so.
No, you're missing out.
What's that all about?
Yeah, it's quite the city, man.
Yeah.
Van Wert, Ohio. Yeah, I played
okay.
it.
Okay. All right.
It's pretty wild.
Damn.
Yeah. Next time you're in Toledo, think about it.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, so because also with a band, it's like a different dynamic again than just like a stand-up. Like you're almost, do you get to the place of where like you don't want to say no because, you know, the rest of the band's counting on you. And then you got like the agent that's booking it and nobody knows who's booking it, but nobody's saying no kind of a thing.
You usually know who's booking it. And we all had a relationship with our booker. We had the same booker for years. But I know the band just signed with William Morris Agency.
Oh, yeah,
which
yeah.
is going to absolutely keep Portugal the Man in your concert listings for the foreseeable future. It's going to be a busy next year, but because we're kind of moving and shaking stuff around a lot, it's been kind of a slow year because we're in between bookers. We had a transition in management. There was some personnel changes and stuff, and I'm looking at all of it. I'm not sure how much touring I'm going to do the rest of this year or into next year. I think at this point, this band has really kind of become an ensemble, and I love it so much, and I'm so proud of everything that we've done, so proud of every part that I've been able to play in it, but it's a grind. I'm old. I live on a farm now. We have horses. I think my perspective may have drifted a little bit. My priorities may have shifted slightly.
But, very you know, interesting. It's interesting how a farm and some horses can change your perspective on things.
I haven't told many people about this. I haven't really talked about it, but I figured I'd tell you and all your followers right now.
Oh wow, so this yeah. is a scoop, an exclusive, if you
it
will.
Might be a little bit of something. Yeah, I sat out my first show yesterday or the wow. day before yesterday. They're off doing a flyout date in San Francisco, and it was the first one that I was tapped out on.
How'd that feel?
FOMO for sure.
FOMO, yeah.
It's weird. I I'm happy at home. It's probably better for my mental health. It's absolutely better for my physical health. Road's hard in a lot of different ways, but I'm always gonna miss it, you know, or I'm always gonna think about it. And I remember being in the hospital post injury and just like scheming and thinking about how to get back out there. And my band at the time, we had a festival slot booked. We were playing a festival called Bumbershoot in Seattle, like great, you know, regional festival, been going for years. And we had a decent slot on a decent stage, and it was like 3 months out. And so that became the goal. It's just like, I got 3 months to figure out how to play a show, how to get on stage and do the whole thing. And like, it's been the central preoccupation of my thoughts for my entire adult life. It's going to be a weird thing to step away from completely, but I'll figure out how to do it in some capacity. And if it's with these guys down the road, beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, it's a killer family. If it's with the Charlie Barron's Blues Harp brass band, and me on jugs and you on the juice harp or whatever, I'm down. I'll keep doing it forever in some capacity.
Yeah, but it's sort of like it's a transition phase in your life right now from like prioritizing the road and the band at kind of all costs. So you're seems like you're exploring other things in addition to just taking a break.
This is what happens when you have a break. You get to think.
Ah, that's what happens.
It is. I have not had the luxury of thought in a few years, you know, and nothing wrong with that. You know, it's been the most fun that I could have imagined having it as an adult. You know, I got to meet you.
Yeah.
I got to meet all kinds of interesting people around the world. You know, I got friends in different countries. That's insane.
Yeah.
You know, and that I know that that's all because of the grind and the road. And, you know, we've played some incredible places that don't get a lot of live music, and you get the appreciation. And it reminds me of what it was like being a kid in Wasilla, and, you know, somebody from the radio is coming to town to play a show. Right. We would see every show. Like, we would go to every show. I saw Slayer, Primus, and Neil Diamond all in the same year just because they came to Anchorage. And I was like, hell yeah.
Yeah, people get excited for that. We play a lot of places like Van Wert, for instance, and people come out,
really,
man.
Really soft.
I'm really bringing up Van Wert in this
really
interview.
Soft selling Van Wert.
Yeah,
I love
it's a
it.
Solid spot, man.
Killer.
You gotta check it out next time.
Have you made it to
it.
Alaska?
Yes, I've been to Sitka. That's it.
Sitka?
Yeah.
Did you play the, is it the, what's the
I didn't play anything. I was just there doing a video, actually.
Cool.
But
we played Sitka last month.
Where'd you play?
A little memorial concert hall kind of community center thing.
Oh, sweet.
It was killer. It was great.
Yeah. What a beautiful place. Alaska is so beautiful, man.
We had never played Southeast before, and I had never been to Juneau. I'd never been to Sitka. I grew up in Alaska. I'd gone everywhere that has a road, you know, and a lot of places that you could fly in and out of. I did those, like little bush plane hauls. But we were in Anchorage, which is like, I don't know, 1,500 miles from that.
Yeah.
Alaska is
it's
so
like a different country.
So big.
It is.
And Southeast in particular, like Sitka was amazing. I don't know how your flight in was, but
it was pretty chill, actually.
We our pilot aborted the landing, did a violent go around
because
a crazy last minute wind shear on approach.
Oh,
so just
God.
Throttle up, and then you just feel that fully loaded plane fighting its way out of wind shear.
Oh,
and
man.
People were crying.
Oh, geez, yeah. Dude. Was this on one of those propeller planes?
No.
This was a standard jet.
This was like a Embraer 175 or something. But
translation, Dante, what's that?
It's a decent sized jet.
Okay. People were crying for that? Just going back up?
Yeah. And I grew up in an aviation family. My grandpa was an airplane mechanic. I did that for a couple of years, like assistant AMP. I love airplanes.
Yeah.
And if you're flying in and out of Sitka, you're good.
Yeah.
You know what you're doing. At that point, I think the pilot was just eyeballing the parameters and like, nope, not going to get it. And he just gunned it and went around. But good.
Yeah, right.
That's how it's supposed to work. I would prefer for that guy in that moment to be like, nah, I don't like it.
Yeah.
And then just scoots around.
I didn't even realize there was such concern flying into Sitka sometimes.
But were you looking out the window? It's crazy.
It is pretty crazy.
It's nuts. The airport's on its own little island. Oh, what was the island called? It had a really cute name.
You know
it's
what?
It's not Kalifornsky.
We didn't fly into Sitka. No, I think we flew into Juneau.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was a little bit more chill.
Yeah. God, sometimes I can't remember.
Sitka was chaotic. It was super cool.
God. Well, now my ADD got the best of me. I want to go back to you.
I want to talk about airplanes.
You want to? Let's talk about airplanes. Let's talk about, you know what?
Baranoff Island. Oh, yeah.
Baranoff Island.
Cute little thing.
So you were an airplane mechanic, though?
I was. I was. My grandpa had this crazy gig. So he was a reconnaissance pilot in World War II. And he ended his career, moved up to Alaska and started a business called Air Parts, which was like a junkyard for Cessnas, basically like a salvage yard, which turns out the FAA don't like
that. I was just going to say, this gives me very little confidence in ever riding in a Cessna.
If you got a, you know, 94 Mitsubishi Galant and you need a door, okay. You go to the pick apart and you find a mismatched color one and you bolt it on and that's fine. But like my grandpa would fully sell you, like if you got a bent aileron on a Cessna 172, he'd be like aisle four. And send you down and you just grab it and then, you know, weld it up yourself. You'll figure it out. And he had every part of every plane. It was a massive warehouse. And his gig was if there was a wreck that had happened within the vicinity of Anchorage, he would fly out with an arc welder and a sack of tools and usually one of his helpers, his employees. And he would either get that plane back up in the air through repairs on site, or he'd, you know, buy the wreck wholesale and he'd just get out a Sawzall and he'd start cutting it up right there. And he would like ratchet strap entire flying surfaces, entire wings to the side of his plane and then fly back to Anchorage holding the yoke like this to compensate for the wind. This is a crazy man. Dude. He had something like 25 dead stick landings in his logbook, meaning full loss of control of the aircraft. And he survived them.
Oh, my God.
He was nuts.
Wow. So
I should have more fear of airplanes, I think, because of that. But I like, dude, in a jet, I'm like, eh.
You're like, if my grandpa could do it, holding down, just rolled the window down or whatever the hell you do in a plane and just held it on there. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
That's the most Alaska stuff I've ever heard in my life.
He was psycho. He was nuts.
Wow. Yeah. So then the FAA kind of closed down his business. Is that how it went? Or is it still?
I think he passed before they caught him.
Okay.
I think, you know, mission accomplished. That he was always, you know, ducking OSHA, ducking the FAA.
Yeah.
They were always coming for him. But it was, you know, doing that in Alaska in the 80s, there's just not a whole lot of heat on you.
You're
gonna do what you're gonna do. Everyone's got a license up there. Everyone's buzzing around. So.
Do you fly?
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
You have a plane here at your farm?
I don't. I'd love to buy one. I got a decent amount of hours. Don't have my license. Gonna get it. probably this year. But
How does that work?
I go up with instructors.
Oh, you go up. Yeah. I thought you were just going up with your grandpa, and he was like. Well, try a dead stick this one.
I have for sure. But it's a little looser up there. They're a little bit tighter on the comms around these parts.
You got know? It. Yeah. But there's more people below you, they probably
I just love it. I feel like everyone on the ground is such a loser when I'm up in those things. It's like we had the gift of the skies. Like don't let them take it from you. It's good up there.
Oh man, that's cool.
If you were into walkie talkies as a kid, have I got a hobby for you? Because it's just all you're just on the radio and you're just it. I mean, it's killer.
Oh, that is sweet.
Folks, that's all the time we have for now. But if you want to listen to my full Cripescast, you can just check out the Cripescast anywhere you get your podcasts.
So roll out the barrel and get the band brewing. Life's got you down, just keep her moving. It's on Wisconsin, the Badgers say it's the old. Wisconsin Jubilee.
You know, sometimes when you're ice fishing, you put your foot into walleye hole and go ass over tea kettle and you think you're done. No, you gotta keep her moving.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap Eau Claire, Chippewa Valley's home for the Todd Allball Show.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, a person with MS and autism and is an advocate for Medicare and Medicaid will join us. Going to be a very interesting conversation. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
America is kept safe because the Army National Guard responds, protects, and supports our nation when it needs them most. The Army National Guard responds to disasters such as wildfires and floods. They protect us with missile defense, cybersecurity, and civilian support teams for chemical, biological, and radiological hazards. Be there for your community and your country. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local... You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls. W228EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour. Sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Wendy Gillette. Tornado watches are in effect in the Carolinas, Georgia, Florida, and further east after severe storms killed at least 36 people in seven states the past couple days. Jerrica McCoy's home was hit in Tylertown, Mississippi.
I grabbed my toddler, wrapped her up, and got on the bed, and then my husband grabbed my daughter. All I could hear is my six-year-old screaming that she didn't want to die. You don't want to hear that coming out of your baby's mouth.
KMOV-TV reporter Kimberly Donahue surveyed the damage in Arnold, Missouri.
Downed power lines, closed businesses, and scattered debris filled the city of Arnold.
Our garage door got snapped in. It pulled it in half almost. The bottom row come out. Two windows broke. Some shingles off the roof. Mom scared to death.
The Fox Chase Apartments off I-55 is one of the hardest hit places in the city. The roof's been torn off buildings, stairs collapsed, and cars crushed.
President Trump and Russia.